Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, June the 30th, and we want to welcome you to our special program for this evening. We want to give a shout out to Dick, to Larry, to Lynn, and we want to give you our topics for this evening. Number one, gun control. Number two, update on Reverend Pinckney. Number three, update on Mumia Abu-Jamal. And then we're going to conclude with some announcements and updates on our political prisoners and Mother's Cry for Justice and for our mentally ill incarcerated. So at this time, I would really like to turn our mic over to our host for this evening. But first, I'd like to remind you, when you are not speaking, kindly put your phone on mute so that we have as little background echo and background noises as possible. Once again, good evening to our panel, our usual customers this evening.
How are you this evening? And what I believe, this is Ralph Pointer speaking. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. Modern death penalty, 80% black. Move lynching indoors. The police is the army of occupation have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. And I'd like everybody's opinion on that or attitude or thoughts on that. But let us remember when we're having a discussion that there's a big difference between theory and reality. And one of the theories behind behind the statement that I just made, the question is race biological? Is race cultural? Well, one thing, sure, can be stated without contradiction. Race is real enough to get you killed when you are the wrong race. In America, the numbers on lynching, legal and illegal and otherwise, and the fact that one black death occurs every 28 hours is certainly a relevant fact. And we should discuss issues from the reality and try to stay away from theory as much as possible. Now, this evening, you know, we'd like to talk about one of the things that happened. The president tried to use the situation in South Carolina and related to gun control. Well, let me talk about the facts of guns in America. When America was first founded, I'm talking about the Virginia Company and the other trading companies that came to this continent in Canada and in the southern part of the continent, North and South America, it was through guns. Trading companies formed to make money, and they used armed struggle to make money. First, and I'm going to relate these issues to the America that we know, they killed the indigenous people here and called them Native Americans. Then they enslaved people in Africa and brought them here. And then they kept them as slaves. All of this was done with guns. And in order to keep people as slaves, every white person had to have a gun because there were more slaves than white people to begin with. And the country has continued with armed struggle around the world, oppressing people. We call it imperialism. These are some of the realities that we have to deal with. And as I say, Mr. President, it has nothing to do with gun control other than controlling those oppressed people from getting guns. And let us remember, all of those who feel that they are of a progressive bent, who lean towards the attitudes that all people should be free and treated the way we want to be treated. And we have to recognize that the weapon of liberation is not an American weapon, but an AK-47. And the weapon that opposed that AK-47 was an American weapon, the AR-1, the AR-15, etc. And so let us keep these facts in mind when we talk about gun control. What does it really mean? And I would like to continue on, but I've taken up enough time at this moment, and I'm going to turn it back over to Betty to let us have the next guest to speak on the issue, and we will continue as in this manner as we go through this evening.
Once again, good evening, panelists. I'm going to do something I don't normally do. We have a guest, area code 219-5053. If you would like to weigh in on this discussion, please feel free to speak now. Please look at your cell phone if you don't know your number, 5053. If you don't speak up, we'll assume you just listen, and we'll mute your speaker. 219-5053. Are you in the house?
Yes, I am. I was tuning in just to catch the conversation this evening.
Okay, no problem. Thank you so much and welcome. All right, then I know our panelists are familiar with our procedure. I know Sister Lynn is in the house, and I know the other brothers would gladly yield to Sister Lynn. So, Sister Lynn, you're on.
And I'm very glad to be so. There certainly is enough happening in the world as we know it that requires our attention, and something we don't know about, which I'm going to talk about because the redoubtable Ann Lamb and Bob Lederer, who keep us up to date here in New York, have revealed a couple of things that are taking place which are important enough for people who listen to Ralph Pointer to know about. One of them involves a prisoner strike in Alabama, in which the prisoners actually pulled it off and, of course, suffered the consequences, because I can say from personal experience, trying to organize in prison is virtually impossible these days. The minute you start, they shut you down, they put you in isolation, or they ship you out of that prison. But apparently these young men in Alabama were able to pull it off, They are in solitary now, and they are fighting for no work, stop work, do not do the work of the man while you're a captive of the man. And that is to be applauded, and we should keep an eye on that. The other thing that I think is important was a case in Alaska, of all places, where once again Native Alaskans, Inuit, were convicted on a murder case, four of them, and now someone has come forward, I believe it was the informant, to say he lied and they weren't involved at all. One of them has been let free on bail, and the other three are waiting an evidentiary hearing on this issue. So these things, they're going on all around us, and if we're not part of what's going on, then we should also make it happen all around us. That's what's important. I also want to remind everybody about the Mother's Cry for Justice on July 11th. I'll be there, invited so kindly by Juanita Young, and I hope a lot of you will be too. I believe it's going to be held at the Shabazz Meeting Place, which is up near Columbia Presbyterian Hospital. I don't know the cross streets. I think it's like 160th or so. But that will be a speak out, a call out, a cry out from the mothers who have lost their children and seek some kind of justice, who are not only looking at the pocketbook that is dangled in front of them and think that that can ever compensate them for the loss of a child. So that, I think, is a very important conference. Once again, that's July 11th, and I think it's called the Shabazz Meeting Place. This is much of what I want to say tonight. I think Ralph is going to comment on the young woman who shimmied up the flagpole and took down the Confederate flag. And my only question would be, why isn't someone shimmying up there every time they put it back? It should be a kind of a thing, almost like a sit-in or a what have you, a lie-in, a die-in. It should not be flown. We should not allow it to be flown. And if 100 of us have to get arrested, I think my shimmying up the flagpole days may be over. But I hope there's some young ears hearing me that think it might be worth getting arrested just to show that that flag cannot fly, whatever the legislature, which is composed of white men and has never been a friend to the black struggle, whatever that legislature decides to do in the next month. And on that militant note, I'll say good evening and thank you very much, Betty. Ralph, goodbye.
Well, thanks. Continue listening in, Lynn, and I would love your comment. I was going to say a few things about going up that flag. Now, a young black woman who talked about her Christian belief went up and that flagpole and brought the flag down. But I would like people to remember the color of the officer who arrested her when she got to the bottom. It was a black officer. And the color of the people who put that flag back up. They were colored people of color. Ground workers. When do people of color say, I will not serve? Very simple act. I will not serve. And then I refer it back to recreating our own image in our own mind. And further on that issue, the people that forgave so quickly, I say, have they lost their humanity? Because one of the things we define as human is the right of self-preservation. It's a human feeling to want to preserve your own life. And if you do not look to preserve your own life, are you more human or less human? And we have to be careful with the words we use. And one of the things I always look to, and we always use the word, many people repeat the words of Martin Luther King, judge a man by the content of his color, content of his character, not by the color of his skin, and we forgot that instantly and forgot to mention that we forgot that when we all voted for Mr. Obama, about the color of his skin, and those who voted against him were voting about the color of his skin. And so both sides lied, and we have to be very careful about how we use words. And I'm being pointed at again to say it is time to have Larry Pinkney come in and give us a little something on Reverend Pinkney, a political prisoner who had the answer, that is boycott the corporations and recall the politician that they had elected for, and therefore they put him in jail to get him out of the picture. Larry, will you give us a little something on Reverend Pinkney?
Yes, this is Larry Pinkney speaking. I'd like to first extend my greetings to you, Brother Ralph, to our courageous sister, Lynn Stewart, and also to the incomparable sister, Betty Davis. Thank all of you for all the necessary and fine work that you all are doing. Reverend Pinkney remains, of course, imprisoned, incarcerated in Coldwater, Michigan, where these fascist authorities have put him. He remains strong and determined. The main thing is that we recognize, all of us, black, white, brown, red, yellow people, all of us, and I'm talking about everyday people, I'm trying to be diplomatic here, so let me just say, not those folks who have sold out their own humanity, no matter what their color is. We have to remember that all of us are directly affected by this. Ralph, you have already summed up why Reverend Pinkney is in prison. I would like to remind everyone that we expect that the appeal will be, the appeal bond, I should say, will be actually turned into the court, submitted to the court by tomorrow, or if not, then very, very soon thereafter. And this will be an attempt to get Reverend Pinkney free on an appeal bond when over something that he should never have been charged, much less convicted of, to begin with. Let me comment also very quickly, if I may, on the whole issue of gun control. I'm so glad, Ralph, that you mentioned that drone man, Barack Obama. That's right, drone man, the man murdering people in Libya, in Somalia, in Afghanistan, continuing in Iraq. Yes, drone man had the unmitigated audacity of an alley cat to state that this horror that took place in South Carolina was about gun control. No, it was not. It was not about gun control. And this was an attempt by drone man, Mr. Kill List. Everybody knows, I hope, that Obama has his own private kill list where he's murdering people without any judicial process at all. Well, drone man kill list, Obama had the audacity to try and change the narrative. The fact of the matter is that, as you pointed out, Ralph, guns and cannons is what the destruction of humanity have been. I want to make a very short comment, too, if I may, with regard to that piece of cloth, that symbol called the Confederate flag. I want to remind people that, people often refer to the Confederate flag as the stars and bars. I want to remind people about the stars and stripes. I want them to think about, all of us, to think about what indigenous native peoples must think about the stars and stripes. Do they, in fact, and some I do know, equate the stars and stripes with genocide, with mass murder, genocide, with land being stolen, with the destruction of their culture, with reservations, and as Gil Scott-Heron would have said, it's an endless list that won't be missed. So we've got to look beyond symbols and look at the reality. And the reality is such that we have to be engaged in the right to self-defense. That is the right. That is not only something that should be natural, quote-unquote, with all humans, the desire to preserve our lives and our dignity, but it is also a human, I repeat, human, I didn't say civil, human right that all of us are entitled to, and that includes black people, other people of color, and anyone who is oppressed. They should, we should, all of us should understand that it is not a choice, it is a necessity to defend our lives and our dignity and our humanity. Having said that, again, I would like to convey my greetings and gratitude to all of you, Brother Ralph, Sister Lynn, Sister Betty. Thank you so much, and want to convey or extend Reverend Edward Pinckney's greetings. Stay strong. This is going to be a long and protracted struggle. All power to the people. Thank you so much.
Right back at you, Brother Larry, and thank you so much for that informative discussion regarding all these symbols of genocide. At this time, I would like to call another warrior for our political prisoners, especially our mentally ill, incarcerated mentally ill, but also someone who's from the South and from one of the states that recently saw a church burning. As you know, a massacre in South Carolina. There have been five churches burned in five different states in the South. Sister Mary, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here, Betty. Thank you very much. Actually, I live in Georgia, and I want to send condolences to all the families who lost individuals in that church massacre, and, of course, to everyone who lost property in the church fires. The fight for the incarcerated mentally ill is continuing, and I want to say that all day I've been inviting the gay people who I heard are being warned not to criticize mass incarceration because they wanted this administration to help them with the gay marriage issue. And so I hope that now that that battle is over, that people who are of that persuasion will come back to the general battle for human rights in this country. I want you to know that we have, at Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill, been documenting the great number of killings that happen to mentally ill people immediately after arrest. Since the system feels like it got away with secretly arresting and murdering my brother in jail, that has become a more popular mode of killing mentally ill people, killing them under arrest because there are not commuters there with cameras to film the arrest, and there's a greater opportunity for cover-up. And so I've been documenting those in my blog called Dog Justice for Mentally Ill. And very quickly, I'd like to say that Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill, for the first time in 8 years, we have a fundraiser, and it's a book. It's about Toombs County, Georgia. A man named Robert Toombs was a Confederate general in the Civil War for many decades. That county has been called Bloody Toombs because of its reputation for alleged lawlessness and violence, often of a racial nature. The memoir Bloody Toombs is about growing up white and privileged in Toombs County during the 50s and 60s, coming of age in Atlanta during the Civil Rights Movement, being an anti-war activist in San Francisco, Boston, and Atlanta during the Vietnam War, and studying at Tufts and Howard Universities after graduation from Emory University. Much of this book chronicles the author's affliction with manic depression, which has been in remission now since 1991. The name of the book is Bloody, B-L-O-O-D-Y, Tombs, T-O-O-M-B-S. It's an excellent memoir and allegory, and part of the proceeds would help give assistance to the incarcerated mentally ill. And if you want to know the latest killings of mentally ill people, which it appears now that many of them are happening behind bars, just go to Dog Justice for Mentally Ill, and you'll see that. There's pretty much a genocide happening to eliminate useless eaters. So I'll just leave it to you to please visit the blog. Thank you, Betty.
We thank you, Mary. At this point, I know Brother Ralph wants to respond, and I just noticed that we have another caller. And Mr. Points will acknowledge you after he finishes his presentation. Thank you.
First, I'd like to say the struggle for human rights for people, gay people, LGBT, is not over. A giant step has been taken, but the kickback is now. And you cannot legislate, justice, but you can legislate people's access to justice. So the fight has begun, and the fight has taken a giant step, but always, with every struggle, there are several parts of the struggle. And as I was talking to people who were there at the gay parade, that in the early years, there was a separation, because those most militant were those who were considered most outlandish by the others. So you had a conservative and a militant group fighting for gay rights. And it was the militant group that initiated the fight. And while the conservative group was in the closet, and now that the struggle has progressed, the conservative group, many of which are Republicans, seem to be in the forefront, wanting to be a part of America rather than change America, the same as all other movements. In the black movement, there are those who want to change the movement, and there are those who want to be a part of the movement. Called those who want to be a part of the movement as the petty bourgeoisie, who would like to be not a part of the movement, but of a part of America, rather than change America. So this is a big issue there, and it will continue to be an issue with all groups. But one of the things that I must mention in terms of the president's speech. The Pew Research Center has a survey that shows 54% of black people view gun ownership positively as a means of protection, and that's a 29% increase in 2 years. And so we must recognize that, as Marcus Garvey said, if we can't teach you, reality will. And I remember being outside of the prison waiting to go visit Lynn down in Texas. And because the prisons are arbitrary and they make up the rules as they go, sometimes people would travel across the country, people like myself, and 10 people would get in. And then the next group would have to wait till noontime or 11 o'clock to get in, but they had to be out at 2. And so to avoid that, I would always get to the prison at 4 a.m. in the morning and park my car, set back the seat, and listen to the radio or sleep. And because I love gospel music, I would go to the gospel station, Texas. And while I was there, there was a terrible scene where police had so-called made a mistake, and they make it all over the country, and gone into a house and killed a grandmother, and who they had mistaken the house for some other place. And this minister, who had been on the air for 23 years with spirituals, etc., had a show with two gun gun businesses, talking about how people can come in and buy guns, and how he would teach them how to shoot it. These were two separate shops, and they gave their names, addresses, etc., and the call-ins were very clear. And now this was before I ever heard of a Pew survey, a Pew Research Center, but the survey shows that was not an aberration. That is real. People of color are being educated by reality. And one of those realities are if you are, you have a 354% chance of being considered justifiable homicide if you are white, killing a person of color using your stand your ground law. And in states that do not have a stand your ground law, you are 250% likely not to be found guilty if you're killing a person of color. And so these facts that we say, well, they don't mean much, they do mean something. People of color are being educated, and the education we want people to understand is a gun is no different than a hammer. You can use a hammer to build something. You can use a hammer to destroy something. You can use a car to go from A to B, or cars sometimes are involved in accidents, and people do die. And so it is how one uses everything, and it goes down to food and everything else. If it's used properly, and I say the use of a weapon for self-defense is proper use of a weapon, and I don't want to hear anybody talk about weapons are bad unless they have been the victim of a weapon, and then they have the choice of not using a weapon themselves, but they do not have the choice of determining how other people live their lives. But I'm going to give up the mic one more time. Betty?
Well, I see we have Brother Dick with us, and I see Brother Joel, but I ask if, since we seem to have another caller on, if I can ask you to be patient. We're going to ask Brother Joel to step up to the mic, and we're going to ask the 9880 to just hang in there with us. We're acknowledging 347-9880, but we're going to ask you to hold, and we'll come back to you. Brother Joel, can you get started?
Yes. Hello. Can I be heard? Hello?
Yes, you're heard very loud and clear. Loud and clear.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you again for inviting me to speak. You know, I think that, coming out of that massacre, it does have to do with guns, but not in the way that it's usually presented. In fact, it's in the opposite way, because if people in the church were armed, reasonably thought to be armed, then that means that the massacre stopped right in the beginning. And it might not have even taken place if the cowardly killer knew that he was walking into a place where he might be shot instead of him just being able to shoot people that didn't have any defense at that particular point. So I want to say that the lesson there of gun control is that people need guns for self-defense against racist killers and fascists, and also in terms of preventing the country from going into even more of a police state tyranny than it already is. And in fact, it has gotten that way more and more because there's a population which has been ideologically disarmed and, of course, martially and physically disarmed, and therefore the police state feels that it can just expand and get more and more tyrannical, knowing that or thinking that they won't get armed resistance. But they will eventually get armed resistance, but they're putting in people's minds an idea to deter that and to put it off to an indefinite day. But people have to think about it all the time, and it's very important to have it in your mind, because if it's not in your mind, then first of all, it makes it less likely that you're going to become armed, but even if you do, you'll be less likely to learn how to use those arms, both as an individual and also in groups, because oppressed people have been attacked both in groups and more often than individuals, and have to be fought off in groups. And people's communities have to become more defensive against what are seen as intruders, which could either be the police in some instances, or it could also be the people whom the police
have
that are going in there to suck out of the community. So I want to say that we all have to think about self-defense, and we have to be armed both ideologically and physically in order to carry that out effectively.
Well, thank you for that opinion, Joel, and that thought. But we must understand that it's called, if I were a philosopher, I would say metaphysical imperialism, where nonsense of an imperial country is put into our minds. And Malcolm X said it best. He says, you have been bamboozled. Because if you don't have the will to defend yourself, then all is lost. And people have lost the will. Can you imagine somebody loading five times and saying, kill you, and people not having the will to defend themselves or their brothers and sisters? This is one that is very difficult for me to comprehend. But it did happen. It happened that way. It is very real. And this is something we have to deal with. And so thanks again. And as I think of, you know, when you mentioned, you know, we have to protect ourselves against the state. I remember when Allende in Chile was elected president by the people, Fidel Castro had suggested that all of his people who had come out to elect him keep his arm. But Allende chose to tell all of his people to turn in their arms, and we know what happened there when Pinochet came to power, brought them to the stadiums, and killed them by 500. And we see that it happens over and over again when people lay down their arms. And you know, we can talk about the history of armed struggle for the rest of the evening. I'm going to pass the phone on to the next person waiting in line.
All right. Thank you so much, Joel, for the Larry, Mr. Lynn. We're going to move on to caller 571, and that's 1741 of the last four digits. 1741. If you wish to speak, you may do so now, or I will mute the mic.
Well, thank you, Betty. That's Mary Neal again. I just moved to my computer phone. But I do want to say that the last mental patient who came to my attention who was killed behind bars was a young white man in Washington State. He was starved to death. He was starved to death, and he died of dehydration and starvation. Another one was here in Georgia. He was beaten to death by 9 prison guards, and his death was ruled a homicide. So, yes, the deaths of the mentally ill behind bars, that's where they're killing them now. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. Thank you very much for that informative piece of information regarding the mentally ill incarcerated. I'm wondering if Brother Minnelli is still on the line. Brother Minnelli.
Oh, I've been on the line, but I'd like you to take any callers who have called in and might have a comment to make, if there are any others. Otherwise, I just have a little quibbling with some of the language that we use in these discussions, and it's not terribly important. Do you have anyone else on the line that might want to say something?
Yes, we have other people on the line, but I said, go ahead and quibble. Let us deal with it.
All right. Well, the first place, the question came up early on when you were speaking earlier, Ralph. you know, is race biological or cultural. And this is the same problem I faced in my book when I'm trying to produce a new theory of psychology, because it's both. And the analogy that I can make is between the distinction that I make in my book between character and personality. Psychologists always mix those two terms up, and they use them indiscriminately. It's in the same way if you think of race as something biological, and then in a next sentence you start thinking about it as something cultural, and you don't bother making the distinctions, you never really learn what it's all about. Well, I found the same problem in trying to outline a new theory of psychology, because I said if we don't use these words to advantage and say that everyone who is born has a character and characteristics that remain constant because they are unique throughout their life, if we don't talk about character and characteristics instead of always talking, as psychologists do, about developed personality, the argument of psychic determinism that Freud wrote, oh, because this happened to you when you were a little boy or a little girl, you're this way as an adult. Nonsense. We are born unique. Each individual who is born is unique by their very position in space, which is the only thing about us that can never be duplicated. So I say we have a character, and then as we experience things in life, we develop what psychologists call personality. Well, in the same way, we are born with a biological racial makeup, a genetic makeup, if you want to call it that, and that stays with us for our whole life. But we also have all the changes that come because of our cultural experiences and our decisions where to live, what culture to work in, what causes to fight for, and everything else. Like that young woman we discussed, Rachel, you know, who wanted to be white. When she goes out and fights for black people, she is identifying herself culturally as a black person. When I do it, when all white people do it. And conversely, when you see the law is wrong for all people in society and you fight to correct the law or correct an injustice, what you're doing is you're fighting for white people, you're fighting for yellow people, brown people, and black people all together. So we have this distinction. It's not always made. We shouldn't ask the question, is race biological or cultural? It's both. And when we speak, we can make that distinction. The other thing, you know, Ralph, you said this, and I say, oh, Ralph, really? Stay away from theory as much as possible. No, that's not possible. It is not possible. It is not possible because we can't reach a specific idea until we have first thought of a general idea. Now, you can't even use your language. Can you say the word imperialism without having a general definition of the word before? So that's what you might call a theory, you know, of political views and things like that. So there's always theory in our reasoning, and it's always precedes. If our theory is wrong, our practice is wrong. So we've got to be very certain that our theory is sound and that we've thought things out on the general universal level before we turn to the class level, as scientists do, and look at classes of subjects. And then after that, we can know what to do in practice in the individual case before us. That's it. That's another thing. Okay. Now, I have a quibble in my book about the term human right. Human rights. I certainly agree. I have been fighting for the rights, but I use a different word because I know some history here. Back in the 4th century, we had a very thoughtful Roman senator, Cicero, who wrote about the nature of law, and it was with us in all of our thinking throughout the ensuing centuries. And everybody who wrote about natural law and everybody who wrote about law had to comment and deal with Cicero's argument that there is a natural law, a law of nature, would you call it, that this is law no matter what politicians write, no matter what documents they sign or credos they follow.
this is law because it's common for all. But I don't like the term human rights, because in the argument throughout all those centuries, we notice that the term human rights are used by collectivists who do not want to admit that there is such a thing as individual rights for every person who is born. And that's the issue here. I use the term individual rights, because whether you are black or white or this race or that race, or whether you're human or partial human, I don't care. Individuals have rights. Animals, even, you know, if you want to get down to that level of the conversation. But the point when you end up, you're going to construct a free society and a just society, the first thing you must identify and protect above all other things are our inalienable individual rights. And why are they inalienable and cannot be separated from us? Because they are natural rights. They are rights that we inherited because we are born, no matter what all the other criteria about us are. So this very important thing for us to say individual rights and to fight for individual rights. Now, you know, in the book I'm working on now, which is about, the principles of a sane society, I start trying to outline it first.
I think that you and Ralph are having a failure to communicate, because I don't think Ralph is saying human rights to the derogation of individual rights. Denigrate him by acting like your theories are being not shoved aside, that is incorrect on your part.
No, Lynn, I'm not saying I referred to two comments that Ralph made, and then when I got to human rights, I was talking about a comment that several of us have been making, that we use the word in a more general. People tend to use the word human rights, and they are people who are not fighting and who don't understand that the real battle is to define.
What I'm going to do is cut in on that, go down to the level of inalienable right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, as we are all supposed to have as individuals and as a group. But I'm talking on a more practical level, as though as if I am driving in a neighborhood and I am a person of color and I go approach a neighborhood that is known for attacking people of color, I do not go into what my rights are. I go into the mall.
Also, Ralph, if you recall and Dick too, back in the days when the 60s, when we were all out on the streets fighting on a daily basis, there was a dichotomy between civil rights, people who were fighting for civil rights, and those who were fighting for human rights. And that is where the split came. And that's why we adopted the term human rights as opposed to just civil rights.
Yeah, civil rights are what the law says about us, and it's usually wrong. You're right. You're quite right, Lynn. You're absolutely right about that.
I am opening up the mic to those who would like to comment on it, because it's a very serious issue that we're dealing with as to what theory as opposed to reality, action. You know, we have right to sit on the street and protest peacefully. That's a nice theory. But when you're out there protesting peacefully and there are those hoodlums in and out of uniform that would take that right from you, then we get down to your basic, what are you going to do, fight or flee? And this is the level we're at. And this is the level in which I like discussion, because that is what's happening. Now, I wish I could sit down with a group of white people and say, a group of white racists, and say, listen, you know, this is merely a cultural thing that we're dealing with here. Or this is merely something else. You know, this is a biological issue. And don't worry about what you think about what my color is, but that doesn't happen, and I'm not going to go there. When I walk down the street and I see a racist and they see me, there's only one issue. Are they going to respect my presence, or do I have to force that respect of my presence? You know,
well, they have to respect your individuality. They have to respect you as an individual human, and that's the whole issue. We try to make clear what we regard the rights of all humans are.
Please don't talk over me. Wait till I finish, and I'll let you come in.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Please proceed.
As an individual, and how do they see me as a group in moving into their neighborhood, having rights to public schools, having rights to public highways. And so, yes, all of this is theory, and I'd like people to understand the theory, but I find the best way for me to teach the theory is to act on it. I understand it. I have no bias to people who are not of color. As a matter of fact, I wanted to get into this Rachel DeLazan, you know, the NAACP president, and I think I was one of the first people to say on this program how upset over her when they accepted Hazel Dukes, who was of color, who put out of the NAACP for supporting human rights, individual rights, in the name of Mumia. That we tolerated Ben Jealous, who was selling the influence of the NAACP. And so this is the thing where people who have done that need the explanation of theory or culture. And so, you know, yeah, we don't need that. We understand that perfectly, and we act on that when we defend.
That's right.
We are all defending these rights. Yes. I remember being out in California protesting the NAACP when Ben Jealous was president and supporting Reverend Pinckney. It has nothing to do with that. I've passed that a long time ago. As Lynn raised in the organization, we had Teachers Freedom Party way back, which you were a member of. We had no problem with that. We went straight ahead with the rights. But what I'm trying to do is get other people who dare or who have the time to listen in on this program to voice their attitudes and their opinions towards what we are trying to do. Yes, and Betty is a philosophy teacher. We should have a discussion with you and Betty sitting and talking about the philosophy of racism, etc. I'm not at this point, the reality of it, these numbers.
I don't suggest that, Ralph. I was just talking about some terminology. I have written a book. You can read the book. You know my philosophy, and you knew my philosophy long before I ever wrote a book. So, just as I knew you were. That's why we're such good friends, and we have been for 48 years. So, you know, there's no doubt about that. All of us, the four of us.
That's
okay?
Good to let people know we're on the same boat, going in the same direction, but we're expressing it in different manners. And I see Joel.
That's right. It was just quibbling over words. I told you that at the beginning. Okay, just because to me they make a difference, and it's all fine, Ralph. I know where you are, and I know who you are. And
we like to put it out there so people can get a grip on the subject from all ends. But I see Joel
wants
to come in on.
Sure.
Yeah, Joel, I see you're tickling the machine. Lynn?
Yes, hello?
Lynn?
Yeah,
go ahead,
Joel.
Hello?
Yes, I'm Lynn. What do you need?
Go ahead, Joel. Joel.
Joel was on already, Ralph.
Yes, hello?
No, but he asked to come on again. Go ahead, Joel. Can you hear me?
Yes. I had already spoken earlier. You want me to comment on the discussion on individual
we are having?
Individual civil and human rights?
There you go. Go ahead, Joe.
Because I think that it really has to be very often these things are used against each other, but I think actually they have to be put together. That I think that to talk about individual rights without the rights that apply more collectively as human rights is almost to deny that racism, sexism, homophobia, deny that these types of prejudices exist and are organized around both on a group and on a governmental level, and that they that they're waged as a warfare involving groups. And at the same time, we have to defend our individual rights. It's not just a question of collectivities being equalized, but to do any type of a fight, whether it's by a given group or by a number of people together from different groups, we have to defend all those individual rights that are under attack at this point. I know, like, we had a group in Union Square, no police state, and a lot of that fight was largely about just the right to get out, not just radical ideas, but any ideas, and to do it, let's say, with sound amplification, because they tell you, you have all the individual rights in the world to speak out, but you can't speak on public property, you can't speak on private property without the permission of the owner, and furthermore, you have to pay $45 to get a permit in order to amplify your sound so that anybody can hear you, while the biggest liars and murderers in the world are on radio and TV brainwashing tens of millions of people at a time. And when some so-called little person representing really the bigger collective of humanity tries to speak out, they put every obstacle in their way, even to speak to a crowd that has a radius of 50 feet. Or of no crowd at all, just to, so I think that you can't fight for human rights without fighting for individual rights and vice versa, because otherwise the discrimination will be used to divide and conquer, and to conquer all, even those who imagine that right now they're benefiting from a privilege, they will all lose in the end, for allowing the mass of humanity to be divided against itself. And we have to really learn to fight the system, not each other, and to build the broadest unity possible against the handful of oligarchs that are just trampling us underfoot in every way.
I knew you could give us an update on that. Lynn, would you like to have a few final words?
No, I think you ought to take us home, Ralph, as they say on the jazz. Take us
okay.
home now. Got only two minutes left to wind it up, so do it.
Yes, and it's about time for our theme. You know, I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. And there is a film out on Nina Simone, who fought the system, overwhelmed by the system, and it drove her balance off. And I think it's something that everyone should make an effort to get out to see the Nina Simone story. And one day we're going to take time to tell the Nina Simone story about how we were involved and what it meant to me, that particular song, and I will go out on that song. I wish I knew how. Thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to hearing from you next week. Thank you.
chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say.
Okey-doke. Did you shut off or did they shut us off?
I shut it off.
Uh-huh.